Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. Today, I feel so lucky with our guest today. We have Dina Miriam, who is just so hard. It's so hard to get everything about her. Her biography is so long and so impressive and so accomplished. It's super hard to get it all in there. But we could say that she is the managing partner of a very prestigious PR firm in New York. She's been doing that for a long time. She's also the founder of the Global Peace Initiative for Women, which has brought women's spiritual group, which has brought women spiritual leaders to the table all over the world to have the conversation about peace. Very powerful. She's a student and devotee of the Guru Yogananda, who's also one of my favorite spiritual teachers. And she's written this really incredible book that we're going to talk about today called My Journey Through Time. And this is a story of her memories of quite a few past lives. I think there's about 7 past lives that have come through very clearly through time, and to see the way that the threads and the themes weave through all these past lives to bring her to where she is now. It's just a beautiful book and very inspirational, very spiritual. I loved it. So I'm so happy to have you today, Dina. Welcome to the show.
I'm eager to talk about this subject because I think it's a subject of great importance today. And so that was really my incentive for sharing these stories, which I've had for many years and I kept to myself. And then at a certain point, I felt it was important to share them.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I think that most people don't have this level of recall for their own past lives. It's kind of unusual, is it?
I think most people early in life have glimpses, but we don't know really what they mean. And one of my hopes is really that people will introspect. So many people since this book has been out have written to me saying it's made me think about all the little signs along the way that I've not paid attention to, that have told me something about my past. And it's just important for people to know they've had a past and they have a future. This is just one chapter in a long, long story.
Yeah, I really, almost I think my favorite part of your book was the ending, when you're in the life between, the time between the lives and the astral world, I think you called it.
Yeah.
And it was so beautiful to see sort of what it was like there, what your experiences were with your companion, and how we kind of go through this remembering and forgetting. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think it's a time where we process the life that we've just left. We see things that are left undone, and we leave with certain aspirations that have not been fulfilled. And one of the teachings that came to me and that I share with people is begin to think more consciously of shaping your future, because we are right now shaping our future. So in that in-between stage, you're processing what's taken place, and you're beginning to lay the blueprint for what's to come. And so formations are taking place. And desires, not just from your previous birth, but from several births, can come together. So I can recognize in my life things from the life, not just the previous one, but the one before that, and the one before that. And that's why I call it a beautiful tapestry, because there are things that are left undone that may take time to unfold. People that you knew, you know, a few hundred years ago, that may not have shown up for a while, suddenly they're going to show up now. And so it's a very complex and beautiful process.
And it's just really interesting to read your biography and then read these experiences of your past lives, because they sort of show up. Like, you know, you mm-hmm. had a past life in Japan, and then you've had a very, you know, very significant, impact in Japan in this lifetime.
Exactly. I mean,
it's all woven together, like you said, like a tapestry.
And my memory of my life in Japan came to me when I was receiving this peace award. And I thought to myself, you know, why am I really receiving this peace? What have I done in Japan that would earn me this? And as I was standing there, the memories began to unfold. Of course, they unfold over a period of time. And I realized it was a cumulative thing. It wasn't just for what happened in these few years that I'm here. What led to that moment had begun long ago.
And so what are the kinds of themes like that you encountered? And I was really interested in this sort of way that you frame karma, because I think a lot of times people have like a very punishing kind of like karma is like you were naughty in a past life, so you're going to get punished for it in this life. And in reading your book, I can see how you experience karma more as that, like leftovers, like things that didn't get fully accomplished in one life get carried over into the next. Is that how you would?
Exactly, there's no punishment. There's a learning, and sometimes you choose for yourself. Like I've often heard it said, people who are born handicapped have chosen that because they're able to fulfill certain karmas all intensely in one life through that experience. So everything is of our choosing, and I think that's such an important thing for people to know. There's no external force that's judging us and punishing us. We're choosing things for ourselves that will help us grow spiritually. The whole journey is about spiritual growth. And so we not consciously, but at our soul level, not at the mental level, we plot out our future to help us fulfill certain things that are left undone, or to help us learn certain lessons that we haven't learned that are necessary.
Or maybe to connect with people that we haven't closed the loop on our experience with them, like people that are missing or people we lost. And I noticed, too, in your narrative, I thought there was a really beautiful, compassionate part to your story about how a lot of the choices you made were to help other people.
And to me, the most touching thing of the experiences was to see the guides that I've had in every life. And in every life, there's somebody to point the way. And to see that as a pattern has really given me such comfort about the future, because there's always been somebody to point me in the direction spiritually. And, you know, so you know that you're surrounded by this loving energy that is going to help you move forward. It's not meant to, that's why I say there's no concept of an external being punishing you. It's all about helping you grow spiritually. And some of the guides from my past, like there was one in Africa, a woman teacher. The women's theme has been a very important one for me in terms of women's spiritual achievement and finding women great spiritual teachers. And I had a woman teacher in Africa who is still with me. I still feel her sometimes. I hear her talking to me sometimes. And that was several hundred years ago. And so I know that I've never left her sight. And of course, in the story of my own guru who I met in my past birth. So these relationships are eternal. And this also helped me understand time in a different way. You know, they say, you know, the past, present, and future, it's all happening now. Well, when I'm feeling the presence of the spiritual shamanic teacher from Africa, that was several hundred years ago, but it's also in the now. She's vibrating someplace in the universe. I'm here, and we're connecting.
That's so cool. I love that. It's so comforting, really. I think that's maybe like faith is a big theme in your book too. And do you find that that's where some of your faith comes from, is knowing that we're guided and protected?
I think the reincarnation is not a belief, it's an experience. Mm-hmm. And so when people say, well, you know, how do you know? How do you know what's after? How do you know it's before? I say, all I can tell you are my experiences. You know, I remember my grandmother who died when I was a child. You can't tell me she wasn't real. I remember her. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the reason I decided to share this is because although many people have glimpses, there are not many such detailed accounts. And I think it's really important for people to know that these are lived experiences. It's not a belief system. You know, they're lived experiences, just like memories from your early childhood might be, are your own experiences, and they help shape you.
It's so cool. I mean, I loved how you, when you talked about women as a theme, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the Divine Mother? Because that was so moving in your story.
Yes. It seems that I've been on a search for the Divine Mother, the Divine Feminine, for many, many lifetimes. And it also seems I've struggled with this idea of that a woman can achieve the same spiritual attainment as a man, which has been, you know, which is common in all the religions only in recent times, not in the very ancient times. And so I have many instances that happened in life in India where I finally, at the end of my life, found a woman, a woman master, I should say, a saintly woman, in a old broken-down hut in the mountains at the very end of my life. And it was the fulfillment of a life of aspirations. And in this life right after that, I was in Africa, and early in my life, I encountered this woman teacher who was really the center point of my life and guided me through many things. And I died early in that life, but I took her memory with me. So there's been this constant searching for the face of the Divine Mother, which is what Yogananda brought to me early in this life, because for Yogananda, it's all about the Divine Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I was 20 and read his book, it was like, aha, you know, that spoke to me. And I think it was because I'd been searching for so many lifetimes for this Divine Mother figure that it hit me right away.
And do you feel like that must be what's, you know, sort of behind this, all the work that you've put into the Global Peace Initiative for Women?
Well, that now I realize that when I started the Global Peace Initiative, which was really to give a platform for women spiritual leaders, because I was working in the interfaith world 20 years ago, and the women were nowhere. There were no women. And so I began to look for the women, spiritual teachers in all the traditions, the rabbis, the ministers, and create a platform for them. So we did peace work. We went to areas of conflict, you know, Israel, Palestine, Iraq, Afghanistan, and gave these women really a platform to do their work. And of course, it was only when these memories began to return to me that it all made sense. So this is why it's such a helpful and healing process, because I could really understand my work. You know,
your soul was calling you to that work even before you had the memories. And then when you had the memories, you could understand why your soul was calling you to that work.
Why I was so dedicated to creating this platform for the women and profile them and saying, yes, women can be of the same stature as the men.
Well, amen to that.
Yes, amen to that.
So let's talk about Yogananda, because we have that in common, at least a little bit. And like you, I was drawn to Yogananda, read the book Autobiography of a Yogi when I was 20. I was in college. And like I told you before the show started, it's like if I was stuck on a desert island with one book, it would be this book. I was so pleased and so happy to read about your discipleship with Yogananda. It's so powerful and so moving. Can you talk about it a little bit?
So I was 20 when in college I was handed the Autobiography of a Yogi, and immediately I recognized him as my guru. And it was a very intense and emotional relationship. And for years I cried that I couldn't meet him. My friends were going to India. Some of them were with Nim Kurli Baba. Some of them went to Sai Baba. They were all saying, you need a guru who's in the body. And I said, you know, that's not, you know, you can't just decide that. He's my guru. What am I going to do? I can't just go guru shopping. And I didn't feel so connected. I'm not an organizational person. So for me, it was my relationship with my guru, not a relationship with an organization. And so it took me a long time, actually, probably 10 years, to get to a point where Yogananda was so internalized that I was no longer looking for an outer form. He was within me, and I could commune with him inside. But it was not long after that that the memories began to percolate of my past birth, and I realized that I had met him in six, I guess it was, five or six, on his way back. He was going back to India. And the one time he went through Europe. He actually tried to see Hitler, said if he could have a meeting with Hitler, he could change what was to come. Wow. He didn't get to see Hitler, but he was in Germany. I happened to be in Germany at that time. I was a Russian refugee, emigre, really, and I happened to be in Germany, and I happened to be there at the moment where I met him briefly. But his image was like burned into my mind, and something was awakened. And sometime after that, you know, I was trapped in Nazi Germany, and I was longing to go follow him, to go to America to follow him. And he came to me in a dream, a vision, really, and said, I'm coming to take you to America. And, of course, I took it literally, and I was waiting and waiting and waiting for him to come find me. And I ended up dying not long after that, but on my deathbed, I saw him again, and he said, I'm coming to take you to America. So he did come to take me from that body to rebirth in America. Mm-hmm. And so that was very healing for me to know that this personal relationship that I felt wasn't imagined, it was real. You know, I was known to him, you know. He and I had this bond, and of course then later on I found a much older bond, which is also in the book. And I don't even know, I mean, I'm still on this journey. I'm going back further in time. I'm working on a second book.
So oh, wow.
How far back can you go? That's what I want. You know, everything that we do and think is recorded in the ethers. Mm-hmm. Everything is there. It's all in our computer. You know, a computer can hold an infinite amount of information. Well, our minds are much greater than any computer that could be built. So nothing is lost. It's a matter of accessing it. And meditation does help you. Now, it doesn't happen to everybody, but everybody gets different, you know, experiences in meditation. This is the way that spirit speaks to me, and spirit will speak to somebody else in a different way. And, you know, it's beautiful to share in each other's the way spirit speaks to each one of us.
Yeah, I think it's sort of big these days that people do past life work. There's kind of like a lot of training now in the Akashic Record work. And I feel like, you know, I sort of agree with what you wrote about in your book that it's not really for curiosity or for like a parlor trick in a way, right? It's really deep. And the way that we access that, you've done it through meditation. Do you have any, like for people that are listening, tips or advice for other people that want to try and experience what you have?
I would say you can't pry open the door. You can be very attentive to things that are happening in your life, but these experiences are very strong. You know, my early on when they began to come, it was my first experience of my previous birth. It was very emotional. I cried. I cried for weeks over the death of my mother, who I lost when I was young in that life. And I was going around saying to myself, this is crazy. I'm crying for a woman who died 100 years ago. But mm-hmm. but it was that intense for me. And it took me a while to really be able to balance what I was going through, because you relive the experiences. And so I would not advise people to go to past life regression unless they absolutely feel the need to. You know, mm-hmm. if it's something in you that you just need to do, then follow that. But I would say just be attentive to people in your life. If there's somebody who's come in and you have a reaction, positive or negative, there's something there to look at. And it's the same thing for work opportunities that come. Really to be just attentive to what's taking place in your life.
It seems to me like in my experience too of these things that there's kind of like a special significance around these past life, like people that like I know when I meet a soulmate or somebody that I knew in a past life, there's sort of a recognition feeling that I have, or sort of a light in their eyes that you see. And like when my son was born, my oldest son, they put him in my arms, and all I could say over and over again was, oh my God, it's you, oh my God, it's you, oh my God, it's you. And I didn't even know what that meant. Like I didn't know who I thought he was.
Yeah, exactly. And if we could see everything, there would be so much joy in it, really, because we realizing that you're meeting people that you haven't seen, who just something was unfinished. And with the children, it's especially quite beautiful. So I think that the most important thing is just to see the joy in it all, and to also there is a thing about the future, you know, of how we begin to plan our future or begin to lay the blueprint, because day by day, moment by moment, we are creating our future. So, you know, while we can't change the past, we can shape the future.
And how can we do that?
Well, again, by being attentive, you know, about not hurting people, mm-hmm. not leaving things unresolved,
yeah.
not allowing excess desires to burden us. Because if you have desires, a lot of desires, and you don't work them through, you're going to have to work them through in the future. So it's paying attention to which desires are healthy ones and which ones are not healthy, which relationships are healthy and which are not healthy. You know, just really doing kind of a self-reflection, a check-in, to make sure that we're not creating unhealthy situations for ourselves in the future.
You know, I had a difficult relationship, and when it ended, I kept thinking it was karmic. I'm like, I've been with this person before, and as the relationship was ending, I kept asking myself, what do I need to do to clear my karma with this person instead of make new karma? Is that what you're talking about, really?
Yes, and a lot of it is attitude. I mean, so much has to do with one's intention and one's attitude, and having a loving attitude toward a person, even if it's a difficult relationship, but knowing that it's not a healthy one for you, and just trying to not have strong emotions either way, but just kind of resolve whatever emotions are there.
Right.
It's sort of like, you know, with skillful means, being able to bring things to conclusion if it's not a healthy situation.
Right. Yeah, that it's been sort of a guiding light in my life, too, like how do I clean up rather than create new mess?
Well, that's a good motto. Cleaning up instead of creating a new mess.
Yeah, that's what I think about that a lot. And it really has been a guiding force in my life and how I conduct my relationships and my connections with people.
So there's one more thing I wanted to add. The reason why I decided to go public with all this is I shared my manuscript with a friend, a writer friend, who had just been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And she was an agnostic. And this changed her whole attitude toward death, and it gave her so much comfort. And she encouraged me to publish it, and that is my hope, that people will begin to look at death differently, because I think it's one of the last frontiers. We don't understand it, certainly from a scientific point of view. So how do we begin to develop a new relationship and see it? I don't even see my past as many lives. I see it as many chapters in one life.
So probably it's taken away your fear of death a little bit anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, new
so
things
comforting.
Weigh us.
I feel like people who are agnostic are really fearful of death, and that when we have some faith or some idea that there's a continuation of ourselves, we have less fear.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, any kind of change in situation creates a little unease, but you can deal with unease without having fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I think it's one of the Native American tribes, they walk with death on one of their shoulders. I'm not sure if it's the right or left one. To befriend death, that's just to say, you know, when I'm done with what I have to do, I'll go into another realm. And when I'm done there, then I'll keep moving. So it's just an ongoing journey. And we're never alone. That's the thing, is we're never alone. We find friends wherever we are.
And how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about your book? How can they get your book or learn more about your organization?
Well, the book is on Amazon, My Journey Through Time, A Spiritual Memoir of Life, Death, and Rebirth. And my organization, the Global Peace Initiative of Women, is www.gpiw.org. And there's a Facebook page for the Global Peace Initiative of Women. We do programs continually. A lot of our focus now is on the environment and climate change. And we do gatherings around the world, trying to change our attitude toward our beautiful Mother Earth. And so we work in a number of fields.
Well, I really hope people buy your book and read it because I loved it and support your initiative and your organization. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show with me today. It was super inspiring to read your book, and I really love to talk to you about it.
Thank you
so much.
It was great to be with you.